All right, so we are holding on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, just past the first Mishnah.
Okay.
We learned in the Mishnah that the Sanhedrin, or this is not just the Sanhedrin of 71, but any Sanhedrin of 23 as well, would sit in a semicircle, and in the form of a half circle. So we said in the Mishnah, a practical reason, so they can all see each other, but the Gemara wants Menahani merely. Where do we get this from? Where's the pasuk that says that they should be sitting in a circular formation? Amr of Achabachamin, and Amr Krof, you have a pasuk in Shir Hashirim that says that this is one of the psukim was describing in Shir Hashirim. Right after the Mishnah. The pasuk describes in Shir Hashirim one of the psukim where the in the mashal over there the man is praising the beauty of his wife and in the nimshal the Eibishter praising the Jewish people. Shorech agan hasahar, your navel, your belly button is like a round bowl. Al yechzer hamazik v'gomer that there shouldn't be lacking from it mixed wine. So what does that mean? Shorech zu Sanhedrin. The navel refers to the Sanhedrin. Why is it called the navel? Because it sits in the middle of the world. The Beis Mikdash, Yerushalayim, is the middle of the world, and the Beis Mikdash is in Yerushalayim, and that's where the Sanhedrin sits.
Why can't you say that Yerushalayim sits in the middle of the world?
Fine, because we're saying more specifically, we're saying that Yerushalayim isn't necessarily circular, but we're saying the Sanhedrin is compared to a navel. Also,
the navel is semicircular.
Yeah, well, it's circular. That's, we're going to get to that in a second. Wait. But the point is that we're comparing this the Sanhedrin to the navel because it's in the middle of the world, which Masha points out. The point is it being in the middle of the world means it's the most equable place, like where the climate is best or whatever, and therefore it's best for Chachma. Also there's an idea just like a baby develops from its navel, and then it starts growing in all directions. So also the world was created beginning with Eretz Yisrael and then the rest of the world. Yeah. Okay. Agan, we compare it because it's Tibur Shalom. It's in the Beis Hamikdash, which is in the middle of the world. We call it Agan, a basin. Why? Agan, Meloshin Hagana, because it protects the whole world, because the Sanhedrin is responsible for justice, and then Al-Adin, Vala Emes, Vala Shalom are the three things that the world stands on. So, yeah. Hasahar, what do we mean? Hasahar literally means round. Sheidom Elasahar means it's round like the moon. Sahar means the moon. And in fact, Marsha points out, the moon is, most of the month, the moon is usually in a semicircle, so you're only in the middle of the month at this point. That's why we have the Sanhedrin not sitting in a full circle, but in a semicircle. But most of the month, that's what you see the moon like. Most of the month, you see it as not a complete circle.
You see it one day is a semicircle.
The next day, a crescent is a circle. It's close enough.
Crescent is not a semicircle.
We're not talking
circles. A semicircle is a circle and a line.
How does the Sanhedrin sit? Do they sit as a circle and a line, or do they sit as a circle? So the first day of the month it's a thinner circle, the next day it's a thicker circle, etc. Semicircle. I mean, yeah. Okay. We say al yechzer hamozeg. Al yechzer hamozeg. We say that the mozeg should not be missing. What does that mean? Shem chutzrach achad man latzeis. What if one of the members of the Sanhedrin, one of the 71, has to leave? Royan. We have to see. Is he allowed to leave? Im yesh for his personal affairs. We're talking about not for a mitzvah. Im yesh esru m'shloisha, can I get Sanhedrin k'tana? If there are 23 of them left, which is the size of a Sanhedrin k'tana, yotze, then he's allowed to leave. We learn that from the word v'im lab. Any yotze, if not, he can't leave. How do we learn that from mezeg? The Rashi says mezeg is like wine was usually diluted in those days, two parts water to one part wine. So therefore, you have to have one part of three of the Sanhedrin. 23 out of 71 is approximately one-third needs to be left.
Okay.
Yeah, 23 times 3 is 69. Because that's how it was. They usually mixed wine, two parts wine, two parts water to one part wine. So two and one. Yeah.
Wine,
23 times 3 is 69. Round it up, and you have 71 because you can't divide the other two by 3. Five. Okay, Tosfos elsewhere points out another way of learning it also. The word mezeg is gematria 50. So it means you can't have 50 of them missing. Al yechzer, you can't have 50 mezeg missing. If you have 50 missing, you're going to be left with only 21. You have 49 missing, that's okay. You have 22, and we know you always have to have an odd number, so inevitably you're going to have to temporarily make one of the Talmidim and promote him to a member of the Beis Din anyway, and therefore that's fine. Okay. Bim Lavin, you're saying if not, if there aren't going to be 23 there, then he can't leave. Okay. Then we continue. The pasuk continues, that same pasuk in Shir Hashirim continues, Bitnech arem aschitim, your belly is like a heap of wheat. What's the comparison? Ma arema schitin akol nenin minen, just like a heap of wheat, everybody benefits from it because it's something that everybody eats. Sanhedrin, I call Nenin Mitameh, the same thing with Sanhedrin. Everybody benefits from the explanations of Torah that they give. And when we continue in the Pasuk, Sugah, the Pasuk continues that this heap of wheat is Sugah Bashishanim, is hedged around with roses. What does that mean, Shaka? Because Sugah Shoshashanim, lo yifritzeh behen protis. Even if all you have is a hedge of roses, in other words, not a very strong barrier, it's not like a stone fence or something, that's enough that they won't punch holes in it. That, in other words, when you have a gedder, when you have a fence around the Torah that the Chachamim make, even though it's only or even that the Torah itself makes, that the Jewish people won't break through it, even though it's only of roses and should be easy to break through. What? No. In other words, that we listen to the Tekonets of the Chachamim.
And maybe you can also say that kind of the Chachamim are beautiful as roses.
There is that too. I once saw an explanation that the idea is somebody who has a sensitivity to roses is not just going to break through them. And some of them are flourishing. Yeah, so therefore we're sensitive to the beauty of the Tekonets of the Chachamim. So one of them are flourishing, I think the Yad Ramah also says the vote is, on the contrary, everybody, you see roses, you right away want to pick them. I think it's actually the Torah Chaim, I think, says it. You see roses, you'd naturally want to pick them. So you would think all the more so, you have a gedder for the Torah, you would think all the more so that makes the Yetzer Hara to want to break through it. Nope. We know how to control ourselves. We respect them. Yeah. And thus we find, in fact, that a certain min one time says to Rakahana, Amritu nida shori liachudi behade gabra. You chachamim say that a woman is allowed to be in yichud with her husband when she's in nida, even though they're not allowed to have relations. How is that possible? Efshe esh bina oris. Is it possible you have fire near the flax combings, which are very flammable, the enema have heves, and it doesn't set them on fire? In other words, how is it? What makes you think that we know you have an issue of yichud because to make sure that there's no forbidden relations going on? How you talking? You're able to be with your own wives when you're nida. How is that? The Torah gives edus on us from this pasuk, Suga Bashishanim, Shafkidu Kasuga Bashishanim, even if all there is a hedge of roses, Lo Yifritzeh Behen Protis, they're still not going to break holes in the barrier. So therefore, in other words, yes, the Eivishter knows that he can trust us.
And Gasha, by having the Siyag of Shoshanim, it makes it easier not to be doing the Deraisa.
Well, okay, no, but the point is you're allowed to have Yichud, you're allowed to be in Yichud.
Yeah, but you're not allowed to... Uh-huh. You know, to throw a ball or to pour something.
In the Hanami, yeah, of course, you have all the various hafakas, right, but we're talking about Yichud, though. But Tosfos, I'll just tell you real quick, Tosfos points out, first of all, the comparison is that Sheshanim, roses, are red, so therefore it fits very well with the concept of Nidya.
Oh.
And second of all, Tosfos points out, the truth is, you have to ask. First, if the Torah asks as Yichud with somebody who you're also to have relations with, how are the Chachamim able to be master with Nidya? And the answer is, Tosfos says, because since eventually she's going to become mutter after she goes to the mikveh, therefore therefore that's not included in the iser at all. In fact, Tosfos points out, the halacha is, we learned this back in Ksubas, that in fact, if a chassan and kala have not had relations yet, if they got married, but there was a chuppas nidah or whatever, they taka can't be in yichud together. Then you taka need kids there as shomrim or whatever, yes. But as long as at one time they had relations, then at least you're able to control yourself to the extent that you can be in yichud. Yeah.
It's a rose, a flower that was growing in Eretz Yisrael.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. Must be one. Yeah.
Okay, maybe Shoshanim are not necessarily. It's questionable whether Shoshana is necessarily a rose. Some people translate it as a lily or a tulip or some kind of flower, whatever. But why not? Roses grow all over the world. I don't know.
Well, now it's different. Maybe roses were not even in existence that we know of.
No, I'm sure they are. Okay. Anyway, Rish Lakish Amar Mehocha. Rish Lakish says I can express this idea based on a different pasuk, also in Shira.
No, the roses have thorns.
I don't know.
It says in
some places.
The roses have thorns.
Yeah, because Shoshana Ben Achoichim. Okay, we're not going to talk botany. Maybe they had roses, maybe they didn't. I don't know. Onward. Rish Lakish Amar Mehocha. Rish Lakish says I can express the same idea based on a different pasuk, also in Shir HaShirim. Kepelach harimun rakoseich. Your temples, meaning the sides of your head, are like a slice of pomegranate. What does that mean? Rakoseich is... In the simple pshat, Rashi explains on the pasuk, it means like her temples or her cheeks are red and beautiful, like a piece of pomegranate. But in the nimshol, it means rakoseich is meloshin rekonin, the empty ones. It means afilu rekonin shabach mlein mitzvahs karimin. It means even the empty ones among you are full of mitzvahs like a pomegranate. famous statement.
Yochanan skin is compared to pomegranate.
Yeah, that's true. Also, yeah, that's true. Anyway, so therefore, again, the point is, Rish Lakish is saying, you see from that pasuk also that even the emptier people among the Jewish people, the Torah can trust them that they're going to be careful with these with this business of you.
There is no Amrei.
So therefore, like the Min is arguing, it's not possible. But here you have another proof that yes. The question, of course, is if they're Reikonin, well, then how are they Malay Mitzvahs Kerimin? If they're empty, how are they full of Mitzvahs? So they give a few different explanations. One of them, in context of our Gemara, was saying even though they may be empty of Mitzvahs, they're still, we know the concept of a person, if a person has a chance to do an Aveira and refrains and doesn't do it, this counts as like they did a Mitzvah. So therefore, these are people, maybe they don't do Mitzvahs Ase, but at least they keep away from the Mitzvahs Loichase of Nida, and therefore they're full of mitzvahs in that sense.
They keep away from Nida,
that's what we're saying. Even if they're reconning from other mitzvahs. There's a few other explanations that are given, but one particularly interesting one is based on a story. One particularly interesting one is based on a story from the Baal Shem Tov. There's a story of Baal Shem Tov one time comes to a town, and he opens the door to the shul, and he says, I can't go into the shul, it's full of davening, it's full of tefillah. And everybody's wondering, so what's the problem? A shul should be full of tefillahs. And he explains, no, the vote is the tefillahs have stayed here in shul. They haven't gone up the mila because there's no av of a year. There's no wings on it. So the same way over here, they say a vote on this. Chiddush avot. Yeah. So the same way over here, the idea is these people, they may have mitzvahs. They may be moly mitzvahs kerimun, but that's the problem. They're full of the mitzvahs because the mitzvahs haven't flown up to where they're supposed to be. So in that sense, they're empty of what's actually supposed to be accomplished.
Not go to...
Because mitzvahs need av of a year. The Alter Rebbe compares it in Parashat Matanya. It's like a bird without wings.
So you do the mitzvah without
av of a year. So the mitzvah is a mitzvah, but it doesn't go up the mila where it should. Okay.
Yeah, if you
onward.
Read the Tanya, you'll find out.
Pretty much all mitzvahs you need to have on it. Okay. Onward. Reb Zera Oma Mehacher. Reb Zera says I have a third pasuk that expresses this idea. When Yaakov comes to get the brachas from Yitzchak, it says Yitzchak smelled the smell of his clothes. Al tikrit begadav ela boigdav. Don't read begadav his clothes, but boigdav his treacherous ones, his disloyal ones. Meaning that even the disloyal people among the Jewish people, even the ones who do averus, are actually they have a fragrance, they have a good smell in the Eibishter's eyes. And the Gemara tells a story in that, and the Gemara tells a story to illustrate that. There were these biryonim, these wild people. Rashi says biryonim is lashon burim, lashon empty people. There were the biryonim from the ones who brought about the korban. That's this Reb Zera, a few hundred years later, but same type of people. This is later. This is a couple hundred years later. But they were the same type of people, these wild, uncultured, whatever people. They lived in Reb Zera's neighborhood. They have a Makarav. Reb Zera used to be Makarav them. He would be friendly with them. In order that eventually they should do tshuva. But have a kapti rabbanon, and the rabbanon objected to it. The rabbanon said you shouldn't be befriending these people. Leave them to their Then when Reb Zera passed away, Amri, then his biryonim said to themselves, Ad ha'idna, up until now, have a charicha katin shake. Up until now, we have the short guy with the small legs. Reb Zera was physically short, so that's why Zera actually means small. In the Yerushalmi, he's always called Reb Zera, which literally means small. Chorich Shake is Zera, cotton Chorich Shake is supposed to be whatever, is based on a story in Bava Metzia, where the Gemara tells over there that Reb Zera wanted to check whether he's going to be immune to the fire of Gehenna. So every month he would fire up the oven and sit inside it and see, and he wouldn't get burnt, and that would show him that he'd know that he's still on the level to be safe from Gehenna. One time when he was doing this, the other Chachamim saw him. Accidentally, they gave him an Ein Hara, and his feet got singed that time. So from then on, his nickname was Cotton Chorech Shake. So these biryonim, that's what it means, the short one with the ball, with the burnt feet. So these biryonim are calling him that. It's like they didn't even have the Derech Eretz to call him by his name, but they said to have a boy alon Rachmi. He used to daven for Rachmanus for us by the Ebishter. Hasha man boy alon Rachmi. Now that Reb Zera has passed away and all the other Chachamim have nothing to do with us, who is going to daven on our behalf? Here will be Bayer. So they started thinking thoughts of Tshuva in their hearts, well, of the Tshuva, and eventually they did Tshuva. So you see, therefore, that's what Reb Zera means, that even the Boigdim, even these disloyal people have a fragrance in the Eibishter's eyes. With that said, by the way, I'll tell you, when I learned, there's a weekly Gemara Shiur given by it's sponsored by Beit Shmuel, Rabbi Ari Chitrich has been giving it for years. I used to be a regular at it until I got busy with this year over here. But when he taught Sanhedrin a few years ago, he pointed out, on the other hand, you could see from the story, the fact of the matter is, and what if Reb Zeira had not been Makar of them all this time? Maybe they would have done Shuvah much sooner. Maybe they would have said, you know what, we don't have anybody to daven for us now, and they would have done Shuvah much sooner. As it is, it had to wait till Reb Zeira passed away for them to start thinking of this.
So
the fact is, they did do tshuva. So in that sense, you can say his approach was right. But on the other hand, you could also argue in the other sense that maybe we don't know. We don't know. But that could be why the other chachamim are thinking. When we say the other chachamim objected to it, it's not necessarily the other chachamim aren't necessarily misnagged him. They may have felt, but what you're doing is counterproductive. You're making them think that they can get away with it.
Then they knew what was right and wrong. Nowadays, people don't even know what
there
it
is. There is that too. Yeah. Okay. All right, going back, it's not a matter of halacha, really. It's a matter of you have to know what the circumstances are. Every case is different. Okay. We said in the Mishnah Shalosh Shuras, well, we said there were three rows of Talmidim sitting in front of the Beis Din, and if they need to replace one of the members of the Beis Din, for example, one of them passed away, then we said they take the Talmid in the first seat in the first row and elevate him to the Beis Din, and then everybody moves up one seat.
Now, the students sat on the floor or on the bench?
The Pashas, they sat on the floor. I don't know.
No, the Sanhedrin sat on a bench?
The Sanhedrin Pashas sat on benches.
They sat on a bench.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
So the students sat on the floor.
The students sat on the floor. I don't know. Okay. Amar Abaya. Okay. They sat on benches. We don't know where the Talmidim sat. Amar Abaya. Shmami no ki naidi kulu naidi. You see from this Mishnah, you see from the way the Mishnah phrases it, that when it comes time to move, everybody moves. Again, in other words, if you had, there was Talmud number one, number two, number three, et cetera, till the end of that row, number 23 Talmidim we're talking about. Yeah. Also the members of the Beis Din, actually. You always had the junior members sat at one end and then going towards the senior members. So if you had one of the members pass away, everybody else who's below him moves up a seat. And the first seat for the junior member goes to the new Talmud who's just been promoted. Anyway, the point is, we see from the way the Mishnah phrases it, that the Mishnah had said that one member of the second row comes to the first row and one member of the third row comes to the second row. So it means, in other words, originally you had Reuven in seat number one, Shimon in seat number two, Levi in seat number three, etc., all the way down to Yankel in seat number 23, the end of the first row. Then you have somebody in seat number 24, the first one in the second row. We're saying we move him to the end of the first row, and so if everybody moves, we don't just say you move within the one row. So the question is, why? The Lemelahu, why shouldn't somebody who was originally at the beginning of the second row or the third row, why shouldn't he say, Ad ha'idna havni yisivna b'resha, up until now I was sitting at the head of my row, hashta mo'svisu libidanve, and now you're making me sit at the tail, at the end of, it's a higher row. But first, he can argue that I was still better off as the leader of my cohort of Talmidim, and now I'm going to be the last ranked in the next one. The answer is, Omar Abaye, Amri Lehofi. They tell him what it says in Pirkei Avos, what we mentioned yesterday. Have a of Laroyas, the better you should be a tail to lions than a head to foxes. So yes, you may be the tail of the first row or the second row, as the case may be. You're still better off there than you were. It's similar, because not really Malam Bakardish. You're going down. You're going to a lower level within the new row. It's a new row, Taka.
The last level, the higher level.
Okay, but it's still. But it's still the end of it. But still, you're Zon of La'aroyas. Now you're among the lions, whereas before you were among the foxes.
All the people that were at the same level, good people.
Yeah, but we're talking. There were still levels among the medical family. Yeah.
Could you say one individual like that?
I don't know. Could be. I've never been to the base in Shamila, at least not in this life. I have no idea.
You can ask Ashma guy.
Because he was a walk from one life to the next,
now you're a Zonov of the new row, yeah. So he could object to that, but you say, okay. Mishnah says, Kesed Ma'ayman Asa Edim. How do we warn the Edim? Now, we learned in the previous paragraph that there's a warning they give for Edim and Dinim Mominus. The Gemara types out what we do. In the end, the Gemara said we inform them that if you're false Edim, then even the people who hired you are going to look down on you, and that way we appeal to their self-respect. And if we ever catch those guys, then they won't hesitate to squeal on you, etc. What do we do by Dinim Nefashis? We need a more serious Edim. So, Kesed Ma'ayim Asa Edim Al Edim Nefashis. How do they warn the Edim when it comes to Edim Nefashis? And they would bring them into Beis Din, or Ma'ayim Aleihen, and they would warn them as follows. Shema Taimur Me'omid. Quite, no, whatever, yeah. Shema Tomerum Omidu Mishmuot. You might say your Eidus based on assumption that you assume that this person actually committed the crime, as we'll see an example on Amidbeis, or Mishmuot, or that you heard from somebody, or Eid Mipi Eid, or your Eidim who heard it from other Eidim who they actually saw it but you just heard from them, or Mipi Adam Neman, or maybe even it's a trustworthy person. If he said it, you know you can take it to the bank, and you think on that basis you can say Eidus. No, none of that works. So you should know. If any of those, then please withdraw. You're not validating. Or Shema Iyatim Yodim Shaseifein of Livdek Eschem Adusha V'Hakira. Or maybe you don't realize that we're going to end up cross-examining you with Drusha V'Hakira, with very detailed cross-examination, and you may end up tripping up. So that's first of all they tell them. Then they continue and tell them, Hevu Yodim, you should know, Shaloika Dinim Mominus Dinim Nefashis. There's no comparison between Dinim Mominus, if you testify falsely, versus Dinim Nefashis. Dinim mominus, adam noisin mominum escapula. Dinim mominus, you testify falsely. Okay, you caused somebody to lose money inappropriately. Fine, eventually you can pay it off and ask the guy mechila, and you'll have a kafar. It can be undone. Dinim nefashis, but when it comes to dinim nefashis, if you cause somebody to be executed without proper cause, his blood and the blood of all of his potential descendants are all hanging on you until the end of the world. Thus we find with Cain, who killed his brother, Shanema, and the pasuk says, "Dmei achicha tzayakim," it says the blood, plural, of your brother are crying out, meaning, it doesn't say the blood of your brother, but the bloods of your brother, meaning, his blood, and the blood of all of his potential descendants, that there could have been billions of them by now.
Someone who doesn't get married. He doesn't have children.
And the Gemara mentions elsewhere, the Gemara we learned in Yevamos, for example, that a person has a responsibility to get married and have children, and if not, he prevents the Shechina from resting among Jewish people, Okay. The Gemara says, by the way, here's another explanation. Most of the Mepharshim say that this other explanation is not something we told the Eidim. Just since the Tana mentioned one meaning of Dmei Achicha, so the Mishnah interjects a second, a different one, not necessarily that we told that to the Eidim. Dover Acha, a different explanation. Why do we say Dmei Achicha? Because his blood was splattered on the trees and on the rocks, so they put Dmei Achicha, the many different drops of blood that were scattered all over the place.
So wait a minute. Does that point to the fact that you do many averus?
Yeah.
For each drop of blood?
No, of course not. I mean, but the fact of the matter is, here we're talking about the Eibishter is going to punish Cain. He says, the bloods of your brother are crying out. Fine. When it comes to the base in Shalmata, you can only kill a person once. But when it comes to the base in Shalmata, the Eibishter can take into consideration all the potential, all the.
Yeah,
all the,
I heard is extremely unpleasant.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went.
What happens if your parents or your teachers?
It doesn't matter. You have to see it yourself. You don't listen to them because that would be an aver.
If your father tells
you to break Shabbos, you don't listen, right? This is the same thing. Okay, let's go on. Then we continue telling the Eidim, L'fichach nivra adam yichidi. It's because of this that man was created alone. L'lamdecha, as opposed to... we'll see the reasons, but the Mepharshim say, some of the Mepharshim explain that with the animals also, there was only, for example, let's say one cow created to be one bull and one cow, but the difference in Marshall says, for example, the difference is there was created the male and the female at the same time. Only by human beings is it first Adam was created, and later on the Eibishter cut out from him and made Chav. Why is that? L'lamdecha to teach you, shekolam abed nefesh achas miyisrael, that a person causes the loss of one Jewish life, ma'alal v'kosav keila ibid olam malay, the pasuk considers it as if he destroyed the whole world, because potentially Adam, for example, if somebody had killed Adam, he would have killed the whole world. So therefore, the Eibishter created Adam alone for that reason. And conversely,
he was male and female.
There's one opinion of that. Yeah, that they were dead. But it's not the only opinion. I mean, the other opinion is that the simple reading of the pasuk is there was a tzela, right? There was a rib. But even you have it in the Gemara and Eruvin. It talks about whether it was drupat sufin or what it was exactly. But whatever it was, basically he was created as one person. And then with Chava appended to him, maybe, and then they were split apart. As opposed to, for example, the
cat. One body, but he was made.
Okay, fine, but there was one body, that's the point. And conversely, if a person saves one Jewish life, and the pasuk considers it as if he saved the whole world. And the Mishnah continues. Again, according to many Mefarshim, these next few lines in the Mishnah are not something we told the Edim. This is just, again, the Mishnah interjecting other explanations why Nivra Adam Yechidi. So another reason is some of the Mefarshim say that they told all these things to the Edim because they wanted to point out the importance of one life. Another reason why the Eibishter created Adam alone is for the sake of peace among people. So one person can't tell the other, my ancestors are greater than yours. We all go back to the same ancestor, Adam Rishon. Marsha says on that, and if Adam and Chava had been created side by side, why what would be the difference?
Yeah.
So Marsha says, because then people might say, okay, but you have such and such tendencies because you take after Adam. And I have such and such tendencies because I take after Chava or whatever. Like this, to avoid that, no, everybody is equal. Everybody ultimately comes from Adam, who was created by himself first, and Chava came along only later. And v'shaloyu ha-minim omrim ha-bir shuris v'shamayim, another reason why Adam was created alone is so that the minim don't say there are many creators, there are many, many powers in heaven. Each one created their own being. Also, is to tell the greatness of it, to show the greatness of the Eibishter. Sha'odam teveya kama matveyas b'choisem echad. As a person stamps out many coins using one die, kulan doimen zelazem. They all look identical. Melech machem lachem. Hakadosh Baruch Hu tava koladim b'choisem shaladim edushin. But the Eibishter, the King of Kings, Hakadosh Baruch Hu, stamped every person with the stamp of adam edushin. Ve'enechem man doimel lachavera, and not one person resembles the other. So that's another reason why the Eibishter had to create one human being first in order to show that greatness, that everybody has the same underlying genetics, but then we still look so different. L'ficha, and therefore, this is a famous expression, every single person is obligated to say, "Bishvili nivra olam," the world was created for my sake. Because we see, just like the Eibishter created the whole world for the sake of Adam, so and Rashi points out what's the point of saying that is that way you feel to yourself, given that I have the importance of an Olam Malay, I'm not going to destroy my world because of doing an Avera, and that'll keep a person away from doing Avera. So therefore, we tell that to the Edom as well to dissuade them from doing this Avera. Okay. The whole world is created for a single person. Yeah, Shvili Nivra Olam. There's a famous verse from a Simcha Bunim Shischa that says that every person should have two slips of paper in their pocket. Rav Simcha Bunim Shischa, yeah. He says that every person should have two slips of paper in their pocket. One should say Bishvili Nivra Olam, the other one should say Va'anochi Apa Ve'Eva. And that way you strike a balance between those two, yeah. We continue telling the Edim, B'shema Tomru Malonu L'Tzara Azos. So you might say, okay, well, Taka, you've scared us a lot. In that case, why should we bother with the Tzara? Why should we get involved in this? Taka, even if it's true, why should we be responsible? No, but after all, the Pasuk says, who aid, Ora, or Yada? If you're an aid, or you saw, or you knew what happened, if you don't speak up and say in Basin, then you'll bear your guilt. So yes, once you saw it, then yes, you have to tell us what you saw. So you might argue, but why should we? So in that case, you might say, so why should we take the chance that we're going to be chayav for the death of this person? Fine, im lo yagid. Okay, so we'll deal with the consequences of im lo yagid. It's a law based on what you're telling us about the importance of a human life. Fine, we'll withdraw. No, falek vanem abavodu shoyim rina. But after all, the Pasuk says, when the wicked, when the Rishoyim are destroyed, there's joy. Meaning, if the guy is Taka Rasha, if Taka did what you're saying that he did, and we convict him, then you don't worry about that you're going to be held responsible, because Adaraba is a good thing to give him his punishment. Rina means joy. We'll see at the end of the parak who's joyous.
Is there any?
We'll talk about it. Then.
Is there any story about the basin that made a mistake and put someone to death?
Next parak.
Oh really?
There's actually the parak after next. Sixth parak. We'll talk about that. We have a long story of Shimon Meshata. Yeah. Okay. Rabban, Kate said, "My Omer." What does it mean when we say to the Edim, maybe you're basing yourself on circumstantial evidence, on assumptions? What's an example of an assumption? Omer lahan, we tell them like this: Shema Kacher Isem. Maybe you saw a scenario like this: Shirot Acha Chaver LaChurba. You have one person chasing another one, it's a famous story, yeah, into a wound building, and you ran after him, you find now the guy is standing over there with a sword in his hand, the dummy metaptif, and there's blood dripping off the sword, and the victim over there is lying there on the ground and writhing, he's obviously the guy just stabbed him. Nevertheless, that's omen. Imkachri isim lo reisim klum. If that's what you saw doesn't count for anything because you have to see the actual. You have to see the actual killing. Not even
he
you got
to kill the dragon that actually
yeah,
killed
okay.
this guy.
Okay. Tanya, we learn in a braisa in that connection. Amar Rav Shimon ben Shatach, erev nechama, may I see the nechama? So what does this mean? There's a couple of different explanations in Mefarshim. One of the Rashi elsewhere talks about that what it means is, he really means to say, loy erev nechama, may I not see the ultimate consolation of Yerushalayim with the coming of Mashiach if such and such is not true. In other words, it's a lashon of shavua. So we leave out the loy in order to make it sound better, but that's what it means. The other explanation, some of the Mefarshim say, it means that I should end up having to have nechama for my children dying young or whatever, Rahman al-Islam, if such and such is not true. Again, it's either way, it's a lashon of shavua. Im lo ra'isi, if I did not see the following. Exactly that. One person chasing another one into a room. I ran after him. I run in. I find the sword in his hand. There's blood dripping from the sword. And the victim is just lying there on the ground, still moving. And I said to the killer, Russia. Me hergal is there. After all, who killed this person? Oh yeah, ni ayata. It had to be either me or you, and it obviously wasn't me. But after all, what can I do? I have no jurisdiction over you. Because your blood is not in my hands. Because the Torah says that you have to have two edim in order to execute the person.
I wouldn't talk to the guy, Ron.
Now Tosfos points out that actually. So what are we saying over here? I mean, is the problem that there's not two edim, or is the problem that there's only circumstantial evidence? Mm-hmm. That they didn't actually. In other words, if Shimon and Shadrach had been there when he plunged the sword into the other guy, it still wouldn't be good because it's not too late. But on the other hand, on the other hand, the fact is we're bringing it in connection with the Mishnah about my Oymed. We're not talking about the question of one versus two Aiden. So Tosfos says maybe what it means is that there was somebody else with Rav Shimon, with Shimon ben Shatach. We just don't mention it because compared to Shimon ben Shatach, they're not on his caliber.
It is contrary to what you said previously. You have to testify regardless.
But there's nothing to testify on because he didn't
testify. Doesn't do anything. Exactly. It's not.
In other words, if he were to go to Beis Din would say, I'm sorry, this is Me'oymed, and we can't listen to it. Even if, as Tosfos points out, there was somebody else there with Shimon and Shatach, and they both saw the same thing, nevertheless, you didn't see the actual act of killing. Anyway, some of the other Mephoshim say that, no, actually, Shimon and Shatach was pointing out two things. Number one, there's not two Edim, and even if there were two Edim, it's only Me'oymed.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
What if he stabbed the guy? And now the guy's dead.
Yeah.
And the sword's still in, and he sees the guy taking out the sword.
Did he see him put it in?
No.
Then no good. No good.
But he didn't warn him either.
Yeah, well, this is also true. Fine. I mean, there's more. Yeah, there's more than one. Yeah. Okay. No, but the fact of the matter is, even if not, there is a point that some of the Mefarshim make. We're going to learn later on in the Sefer. We're going to learn way further along in the eighth parak that you have when it comes to a Ritzeach, you asked me yesterday why we treat a Mesis so severely. In a certain sense, we treat a Ritzeach more severely.
Right.
When you have a case where somebody who clearly did Ritzicha, but there's not enough evidence to convict him, like a case like this, in many cases, based in Machnissin Ois of the Kippah, they can put him in confinement and have him killed in a more indirect way, not using Mesis base. So therefore, in other words, the point is, in other words, if it had just been, for example, there's Edom over here, but there's only circumstantial evidence, then conceivably they could do that. The problem is, here there's not even two aided.
So maybe that's what he means by having only one.
That's maybe what he means. Also, yeah.
Now, for Ritzicha, the official way to kill someone, they have to warn him and he has to acknowledge.
Yeah, that's the usual with anything. But again, there was an example. Let's say he was herding Nefesh Be'edim. He did it with Edim, but there was not proper Hasra, or he wasn't Matar Asma the Misa, or whatever. Yeah, then you can do the Machmissin Oitzel the Kippah. Then we stick him in the Kippah.
To witness the murder.
And how is that in general with anything? How is that with Chilul Shabbat either? 99% of the people would not be Matar Asma the Misa. Yes, but that's what we're going to learn in the next paragraph, but that's essential. You do have to give them Hasra, and they do have to say, I hear what you're saying, and I'm going to do it anyway. How often would that happen? Takan, not necessarily very often, but those are the days.
You know, obviously, you tell yourself, yeah.
There's manslaughter would be Bishkarga. No, there's another, it would be Bishkarga. You know, we'll learn about that in Matas. Okay, onward. Anyway, Shimon Shatach continues to the guy, Hayadeh Machshavos, but the Eibishter who knows thought, and he knows, therefore, whether you killed him, b'meizid or not, Yiparah, Me'oisa Ish, may he punish that person, meaning you, Shaharagas Chaver, who killed the other person. Amru, and they said, the end of the story, Le'zozum Yisham, they didn't move from that place, Achabon Nochash, until a snake came, Ve'ikisha Yomess, and bit this guy, and he died. So he got his punishment. The question is that tacit punishment? Is this a person who's supposed to be killed by a snake? Well, Amr of Yosef, didn't Rabbi Yosef say, and so also they learned the yeshiva of Chizkiya learned to Braisa, from the day that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and actually Tosfos points out even before that, because Sanhedrin left Loshkas Agazas 40 years before the Churban. But this still Tosfos says, and when they needed to during those 40 years, they could return to the Lishkas HaGozes temporarily when they had a case to judge. They moved from there on a regular basis, as we'll learn in the next paragraph, but occasionally they would come back there for special occasions. They moved to Chanus, and then to Yerushalayim proper, and then to Yavne, the Esther Goliath, Golsa Sanhedrin, the Gemara. They were in Yerushalayim still, yeah. But once they're out of the Lishkas HaGozes, they can't judge in a The reason they left is because Nefishi Roitzchim. The Gemara mentions at the end of Sota, because there was getting to be too many murders, and they weren't able to keep up with it, basically. Okay. Anyway, Miyom Shachar HaBismikdash, from when the Bismikdash was destroyed, Alpha Bisham Batla Sanhedrin, even though the Sanhedrin is Batla, and there's no more Dini Nefashas being done by the Sanhedrin, Abba Missus Le Batla, but the Dalit Missus are not Batla. What do you mean, Le Batla? Well, Batla, they are Batla. Nobody's doing Skiller, nobody's doing Strafer, etc. Ella Din Abba Missus Le Batla. No, what we mean is the Din, that the Eibishter takes care, that the Eibishter deals with somebody who's Chayiv Nisa, that is not Batla. How is that? Mishnah is chayv skila. If you have somebody who did an aveda that makes him chayv skila, oy noifum in agag, either he falls off a roof, which is, as we'll learn when we learn about how skila is accomplished, the first stage is they throw him off, phase one is they throw him off a platform, or an animal tramples him, which is the same idea. The animal knocks him down onto the ground and tramples him, which is similar to being pelted with rocks. Mishnah is chayv strefa, somebody who is chayv strefa, or no for the glaker, either he falls into a fire and gets burnt, or nachash makisho, or a snake bites him, and the venom of the snake burns him. Mishin is chayav hariga, somebody who's chayav hereg, or nimsal malchus, either he gets handed over to the government, and the government in those days, their typical method of execution was beheading, or listen by nolav, or he gets attacked by bandits, and they do the same thing. Mishin is chayav chenek, and somebody who's chayav chenek, either he ends up drowning in a river, or he dies of diphtheria, which is a disease that closes up the throat, and the guy suffocates. Okay, Tosfos points out it's obviously not a blanket statement. We know lots of people who are over terrible Averis, and they live out their lives. So Tosfos says, okay, you know, first of all, we know the usual things. The Eibishter can be patient with them. They can have the schus of Milo or other mitzvahs that they did. Whatever. When it comes to the Eibishter's calculus,
that we get
that's correct. That's correct. That's different. That's correct. But whatever, as usual, the Eibishter has his calculus that we're not privy to. Yeah. Okay, anyway, the point of the question is, this guy committed a murder. Murder is one of the things that a person is chayav hereg for. So therefore, he ought to have been killed either by Listim or the Malchus. Why is he being killed by a snake, which is parallel to Srefa? The answer is Amri. The answer, Ahu chet achrini habadeh, that person had also committed some other aveda, that he was chayav Srefa. The Omamar, and as the Tana says, as we'll learn later on in the sector, Mishin is Chayev, Shtei Mrs. Beistin. If you have somebody who committed two different Averis, where he's Chayev two different Mrs. Beistin, Nidim Rachamur, he gets judged with the harsher one. Srefa is harsher than Hereg, according to all opinions. So therefore, if the guy was Chayev Srefa for something else, as well as Hereg for this, then Srefa is what he gets.
Is Srefa the highest one?
According to Rav Shimon, yes. According to the Chacham Eskilo's eyes.
Yes, that's the guy's big killer.
Yeah.
Too late.
We'll learn about it in the seventh paragraph. They don't talk about it in terms of how much pain the person actually feels, because you don't really have a way of finding that out. We talk about how it is in terms of the various averas that a person is chayav skila versus strafe before, which ones are the harsher, which ones are the more serious averas. Yes.
By the way, animal sounds like a good one. Is it elephant sounds like a good
I have no idea.
Sounds like a good one.
It sounds like a yeah.
We
okay.
Can hear animals killing.
Goyim killing a Yid is a savage or different. That's what we said, let's destroy it all and get attacked by bandits.
But those seem to be Yid.
Not necessarily, but okay. All right. We said me'oymen chola. We said that in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, we warn the edim. Don't think you can do based on circumstantial evidence. You can't give edus based on circumstantial evidence, like we just discussed. So the question is, the dinin of farshas u'delayam dinan. The implication of the Mishnah seems to be that that when it comes to dinin of farshas, we can't use oymen. But when it comes to dinin mominus, am dinan. But it sounds like when it comes to dinim mominus, by implication, because we didn't mention it in the previous perek when we talked about the iyum for dinim mominus, the implication is it's not a problem to do oymed over there. In which case, keman kirab acha. In which case, we would have to say, who is this Mishnah like? That would be like Rab Acha. D'tanya, Rab Acha over. Gomel ha'oicher ben agmalim. If you have one camel that is oicher among the other camels, what is oicher? Rashi brings two explanations over here. One is that it means it's biting. And the other is that it means that the animal, that the camel is in heat. It's during mating season, so then it's, you know, there's testosterone poisoning, basically. So Rashi says, Oicher is Mila, Gomel, Ocher, Keneged, Ocher. They have relations back to back, therefore Oicher has to do with mating. Different other Mephoshim talk about different other possibilities that Oicher can mean, like spoiling for a fight, or whatever. Anyway,
animals are the only animals.
Yeah, the only ones that are Ocher, Keneged, Ocher, indeed, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so one camel is oicher among the other camels. The nimta gomel horug b'tzigoy. Later on, you find a dead camel next to it. Be a duash as a hogar. Then it's obvious that this one must have killed it. And you hold the owner of that wild camel responsible. That's according to Rav Acha. So it sounds according to Rav Acha. In other words, yes, you can use oymed when it comes to dinim mominim.
Even if you kill it, it doesn't mean that you started the fight.
It doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is this animal killed that one. According to Rav Acha, we can assume that that's the case. Okay, so the question is, according to your svara, if you're saying that you can prove from the Mishnah that you're able to use oymed by dinim ominus, what about what about, for example, the concept of one aid hearing from another, which is only mentioned in an Or Mishnah? It didn't mention that in the previous parak either. Oymed means circumstantial evidence. Like here, nobody was there when the one camel killed the other, but we assume based on their oymed means to estimate, means to assume. So ABPA, Dukatani to Dinin of Fashas, what about, for example, one aid hearing from another? We're only mentioning it in our Mishnah in connection with Dinin of Fashas. Are you going to say also the Dinin of Fashas, who delay am Rinan, hub Dinin Mominus am Rinan? What does that mean? We would accept hearsay evidence when it comes to Dinin Mominus? Obviously not. Vahotsanam, we learned in that parak, we learned in the previous parak that no, im Omer hu Omer Shani Chayev Loi. If the aid says, well, this person said that I'm Chayev for the other guy, or Ish Plaini Omer Lichu Chayev Loi, or I heard from Plaini that he's Chayev, then it doesn't count for anything. Ad Shiyomer, unless he says, unless he says he gave aid, he was murdered in our presence, and said Atem Eidai, as we learned from the Gemara over there, that he's high of 200 zuz. Alma, which shows, which goes to show that even though you have something which indeed, for example, ABP aid, which indeed doesn't work by Dinim Ominous, nevertheless, I'm reading Lahuba Dinim Nefashis, nevertheless, we do mention it to them specifically by Dinim Nefashis. We don't assume, the Yad Ramah points out another explanation of our Gemara. It's not just the fact that the previous Mishnah didn't mention certain details and our Mishnah does. It's also, what the Gemara wanted to say is that maybe certain things that everybody knows that always apply to the Dim of Eidos, maybe we don't have to mention it. So we mention Oymed, for example, because given that Rav Acha said you can do it by Dinim Mominus, then therefore they may not realize that's not the case by Dinim Nefashis, and therefore you have to inform them. But the Gemara is answering back. When it comes to ABPA, everybody knows that it doesn't work by Dinim Mominus either, and yet we see that we mention it to them by Dinim Nefashis. So, yeah. Hachanami, so the same thing. You could say as far as oymed, as far as circumstantial evidence. Even though it may well be possible by dinim mominus, because according to the Chachamim who disagree with Rav Acha, it doesn't work by dinim mominus either. Nevertheless, I'm reading the Huba dinim nefashis. We still make a point of mentioning it to them by dinim nefashis, because as much as possible by dinim nefashis, we want to clarify to them what the rules are in order to scare them out of, in case they're planning to testify falsely or based on hearsay or whatever they should be scared of. By dinim mominus, Rashi says we're not so worried about that. If the attacker are not allowed to be testified based on hearsay or oymed or what have you. But if they do, it's not the end of the world. Because like the Mishnah said, dinim mominus, you can always...
We don't want them.
But that's the Mishnah is saying. By dinim mominus, you don't necessarily need to go into that level of
the
as opposed to dinim nefashis, where it's irreversible, then... Okay. We said in the Mishnah, we tell the Edom, hevu yodim, you should be aware that if you kill somebody, then you're responsible for all their descendants until the end of time. So we said in the Mishnah, kill dmei achicha. So what does this mean? Amr Rav Yehuda b'Rei d'Rav Chiya. Melamed she'osa kain behevel ochav chaburis chaburis tias tias. When we say killed mei achicha, another meaning of it is that Cain was making many different wounds and many different injuries on his brother. He didn't know what would be a fatal blow. Nobody had died at that point yet. Until he reached his neck, and then when he hit him on his neck, then that's what killed him. So therefore, that's what we mean when we say in the Mishnah, "Domim mushlach ala'etz ba'lavonim," that his blood is splattered all over. Why? Because Cain hit him many times in many different places in his body until he finally managed to figure out where to kill him. From the day that the earth opened up its mouth to kiblate l'domei shel hevel and received hevel's blood, which in other words, Tosfos says, usually blood gets absorbed into the earth, but usually there's some remnant of it left. You can see afterwards there's some sign over there that blood had been spilled over there. Here it got completely absorbed into the earth. So from then on, shuv led poscha. From then on, the earth never again opened its mouth. It was a punishment, basically. In other words, the earth acted improperly by doing that. So the vort is, the Mephoshim say, that what should have happened by right is that, so on the one hand, they talk about maybe the earth was the Malach in charge of the earth, whatever was thinking, maybe in order to protect Hevel's dignity so that he should be properly buried, maybe to protect Cain's dignity so it's not so obvious that he's of his crime, but still, by rights, what should have happened, Mephoshim say, is, you know, you're fine. For example, when they killed Zechariah and Navi in the Beit Mikdash, what happened? We said in the Kinnis on Tisha B'Av, the blood is bubbling over there for 200 odd years until Nevuzet Adam came along. By rights, it should have happened something like this over here also. The blood shouldn't have been absorbed into the earth. There's a Loshon HaPasuk, actually. There's an Eo, even in one of his complaints, when he's complaining about the hard time he's having and how his friends are all against him and everything, he uses a similar expression. He says, Eretz al tachasi dami, earth, don't cover up my blood. Let it be obvious that my blood has been spilled over there and I demand justice. So therefore, in other words, the vote is that earth should have done the same thing over here. Yeah, okay. Yeah, but that's right. Wait. So the earth never again opened its mouth. The Pasuk is, we've heard from the edge of the earth, we've heard songs, Tzvila Tzadik, a beautiful thing for the Tzadik. Now, since when do songs come from the end of something? The point is, the song of the earth, everything we know, everything in the world, sings a Shira to the Eibishter. With the earth, it's not coming from the earth's mouth, but rather only from its edge. In other words, therefore, it'll never open again its mouth.
What do you mean,
Shida? Whatever it means, exactly it means. The earth is not saying Shida in the normal way with its mouth because it used its mouth in the wrong way for this. Chizkiah, his brother, said, I have a stira. The Pasuk says, like you said, by Korach, but Shiftahar, it's a stira. The earth opened up its mouth. Amalai, he answered him, Rabbi Yehuda said this thing, and Chizkiah asked him immediately. The answer is, we don't mean that the earth never opened its mouth. We mean it opened its mouth for evil, to punish the Rishayim, but not again for a good thing, for example, to sing Shira. Tosfos, by the way, mentions an interesting side point over here. This that we're saying, that we hear Zmiris, miknafa oretz, from the edge, literally knafing the wing of the earth. So Tosfos brings from the Tshuvas HaGa'inim that in Eretz Yisrael, the minhag was to say Kedusha only on Shabbos. Why? It's the Pasuk describes the Malachim as having six wings. So they use one wing, the Shchais of Sheish Knafayim Lechad. Each one has six wings.
Six wings?
I don't know. I'm not a Malach. I have no idea. But each wing they use to say Shira to the Eivishter on each one of the days of the week. Wing number one on Sunday, wing number two on Monday, etc. Comes Shabbos, the Chayas say, Hashem, we ran out of wings. What are we going to sing Shira with? And the Eivishter says, the Kanaf of the earth. So therefore, on Shabbos, when the Chayas HaKodesh are not singing Shira, and the earth is singing Shira instead, then we have to make up for it with Kedusha. So the Rav Chava says about it, what do you mean? We do say Kedusha every day. And he says, maybe the vote is not that in Eretz Yisrael they didn't say Kedusha at all, but we know the different Nuschos of Kedusha. You have the Or Nusach is that we say on weekdays and on Shabbos, Nakdishach v'naritach k'neyam siyach sozach v'kodesh. In Nusach Ashkenaz, they say differently. They start off, Nekadesh eschimcha ba'olam k'shem shemakdishim oif v'shmei marim. What's the difference? Nakdishach v'naritach is saying, we are going to do exactly what the Malachim do. The Malachim say Kodesh, 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 and we are Nakdishach v'naritach, we will make you holy like the Malachim do. On the other hand, Nusach Ashkenaz, which apparently is similar to what they had in Eretz Yisrael, is just saying, Nekadesh Hashem Chabalim, we're going to make your name holy in the world. But we're not explicitly saying Kishem in a similar way as they do it. They do it by saying Chadash, we're just going to describe what they do. So it's a difference, in other words, between we're doing it ourselves versus we're just describing what they do. So now on Shabbos, even in Nusach, in 9:30, 5 minutes. On Shabbos, even in Nusach Ashkenaz, they say Na'aritzach v'Nakdishach, which is similar to on Nusach on weekdays. In that sense, we mean that they say Kedusha on Shabbos, that they actually are saying, we're going to say Kaddish, not just we're going to describe how the Malachim say Kaddish. It's a nuance, but that's the Rav Chava for you. Okay. We have a couple more minutes. Okay.
Means they are doing it right
now. No, according to the Rav Chava, it's not. V'amar of Yehuda Breder of Chia. Yehuda Breder of Chia says another thing we learn from that story of Cain and Hevel. Golus mechaperes ovein mechze. Golus can cause kapara, can bring about kapara for half of a person's avera. Why? Me'ikra k'si v'ayisi novonod. Originally, Cain complains that now I'm going to have to be novonod. I'm going to have to be wandering and rootless. Later on it says that he was in the land of Noid, meaning the land where everybody wanders around, but he's not Na anymore. He's not having to wander around within that land itself. He's able to settle in that land.
Na means
wandering, and Nod means like, also, they're two different synonyms. Yeah, that's sort of like bouncing back and forth. Yeah. So he was the Eret Noid, the Eret Shekala Golan, Golan Lasham, Rashi says, sort of like the Eremit, but he's able to put down roots in one place. Marshal says differently. Na also means, based on a medrash, that it meant that wherever he goes, the earth shakes underneath him. So like this, though, the fact that he went into Golos, there's no more Na. He's Be'eretz Noid, he's in the land of wandering, but there's no more earthquakes wherever he goes. So we see that Golos was Mechaper, perhaps. Omer of Yehuda, Golos Mechaper is Shloish Advarim. Golos is Mechaper for three punishments that a person might otherwise have to undergo. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Yirmiyah warns the people in Yerushalayim, Koyim HaShem, HaYosha Be'ir Azoy, anybody who remains in this city of Yerushalayim, up until the siege and whatever, Yomus Bacherev Barov Vadover, is going to die from the sword or the famine or the plague. But anybody who goes out, anybody who leaves the city, the Nafal al Kastim Atarim Aleichem, and then defects and surrenders to the Kastim who are besieging you. In other words, he goes into Golos. Yichya, he will live. His neshama will be spoils for him. In other words, he'll gain his own life. So we see Golos takes away, prevents him from having to undergo any of these other three things. Cherev, Rav, and Death. Golos in general, but more specifically from Eretz Yisrael, yeah. Rav Yechanan Amar, Golos Mechaper Asal HaKol. Rav Yechanan says, actually, Golos is Mechaper for everything, not just that. Shenema, the Pasuk says, another Nevuah of Yirmiyah, he says about King Yechonya, Koyamar Hashem, Kisvor Seisha Ze'ariri, write down that this man, Yoyachin Yechonya, is going to be childless, Geber Lo Yitzvach B'yomav, a man will never have any success in his life, Ki Lo Yitzvach Mizare Ish Yoshev HaKisid David, because he'll never be successful, he'll never get to see that there'll be any of his descendants, any man, whoever sits on the throne of David, or Moshel Oid B'Yehuda, that will ever again rule in Yehuda. That was before the Golos, or Bosa the Gola, but after he goes into Golos, Uvnei Yechonya, the children of Yechonya, so he wasn't childless, he Taka had children, and his sons, Asir Shalti Obenoi, why is he called Asir? She Barti Ima Vesa Asurim. Okay, we'll continue with that tomorrow. The point is, we see that he had children, and not only he had children, but as we'll continue tomorrow, that one of those children, was one of his descendants, was Zerubbabel, who actually was the leader of the Jewish people at the beginning of the Second Mishmash. So we see, even though the Nebuah on him was he's not going to have any children, and he's never going to have any descendants to rule over the Jewish people, but it was reversed. He had children, and because of Golos. Because of the Golos that he underwent, that was Mechaper. Not yet.